Welcome to Free Energy Now. This is our third week in broadcasting our hourly show, or it's a one-hour show, every week on Saturday, brought to you by the BBSRadio.com. There's a live streaming throughout the internet. It is also available on archives. This is based, our show is based at FreeEnergyNews.com, where you can read, go every day for our daily news. We have with us on our show today, Mike Schuchel. Mike, how you doing?
I'm fine. Yourself, Sterling?
Good. I met Mike via the internet about a year ago. He was telling me about this amazing technology by a Joseph Flynn, where he's able to multiply a magnetic effect. Let's talk briefly, just in layman's term, what is going on in the Flynn parallel path technology?
Basically, in the Flynn parallel path technology, Sterling, we have, in the simplest form, what I consider to be a static force device. And with the static force device, you have two flux paths. In the case of what we've demonstrated on the website, the PestWiki website, there's an upper flux path and a lower flux path that we use basically transformer laminates to create. Those flux paths are wound with a fairly modest number of amp turns of wire on each path in the center of the path. And they're stacked on, you know, two magnets, both common poles up, so we'll say, you know, upper bar, lower bar, with magnets between the two bars holding them apart. And the common poles are together on each bar. So those two bars with the windings create a what we call a static force device. And what we've discovered is basically what's shown on the Flynn website, and that is that with a very modest amount of electrical energy in, you're able to steer the flux that's present in both of those permanent magnets in one direction or the other in the device, focusing all the energy to one side of the device or the other. And
yeah,
I'm
maybe we could pause for a second, and I think I understand this fairly well, and let me, maybe if I explain it from my point of view where I'm not as technical as you are, mm-hmm. perhaps the audience might understand it yet better.
Okay, sure.
On a magnet, you've got the north end and you've got the south end. And as you know, in a motor, you've got magnets, and the idea is with an electromagnet to turn the north and south off on the an electromagnet to then repel or attract to the permanent magnet that is in the motor, and you get your rotation in that manner. Mm-hmm. Well, what's going on here is you have the north and the south of a magnet, and so you have two poles going on there. With the flux, with the parallel path technology, you're actually combining the north and the south poles and you're of two magnets, and you're sending them all in one direction, so that rather than just one polarity, you're actually getting four times the magnetic flux. Is that correct?
Actually, it's two times the flux, four times the force.
Okay.
You double the flux and quadruple the force.
And this is merely done by running a little electrical impulse through these laminates that you're using to connect the two magnets together. You send that flux in one direction, and you double the magnetic polarity, and you say you quadruple the force.
Correct.
Now, that sounds like, it makes sense that that might be possible. Let's talk about, is it actually possible? And one of the reasons we have you on the radio on this interview is because you have built some of this stuff and you've proven that this does work, both from a static point of view of building one of these little proof of concept magnet on-off devices, as well as an actual rotating motor. Is that correct?
That's correct. That is correct. Numerous devices. And basically, what it all boils down to, Sterling, is when the device is designed and built correctly, you're going to have two windings, one on the upper flux path and one on the lower flux path. Both windings are activated simultaneously. You apply power to both of them at the same time. Both windings have to create a north and south pole that on one flux path, we'll say, we'll pick the upper flux path. On the upper flux path, the electromagnetic winding is going to be aiding in the field direction and the flux path to go through it. On the other flux path, the lower flux path, it will be a reverse polarity with respect to the upper flux path. And it will be opposing the flow of flux. And by aiding and opposing simultaneously in both paths, that's where this steering that I talked about earlier becomes apparent. It actually adds, you've created an electromagnetic field in the two windings. You're adding that field to the already existing permanent magnet field in the two permanent magnets while focusing it from one side of the device to the other. So if you have the two windings, we'll say polarized with the upper north to south and the bottom south to north, you're going to focus all the energy that's been created, that you created electrically in the two windings, electromagnetically, with the energy that's in the two magnets, and have it all focused to one side of the device. And you can measure these effects. The other side of the device will have absolutely zero field strength.
Let's talk for a minute about the bottom line in terms of the energy consumption versus the energy out. Basically, for the same size of device, the same electrical input, how much more energy are you getting out compared to conventional?
With this device, you're able to, with the electromagnetic energy that would be required in your windings to equal one magnet's Gauss level. In other words, if you were to take one of the two magnets that are holding these two upper and lower flux paths apart and measure the Gauss level of that magnet, that's the amount of flux, electromagnetic Gauss, or field strength you have to create to make this device switch. So by doing that, and I go back to that because it's important to understand the basics, but when you create that field that's equal to one of the two magnets, you're able to couple with those magnets and focus all of the flux to one side of the device. So you're actually able to get double the flux focused to one side of the device.
Does that
by
mean
only
you're
having to apply power, the power that's required to create one unit of flux, one magnet's worth, you're able to get two magnets worth focused to one side.
So are you doubling the energy output of your motor?
You're doubling the amount of force that you're able to create. And thus, yes, you will see an extreme increase in efficiency. I won't say it's totally a double. It's considerably more than 150, percent of what the original would have been.
If I understand right, the reason it's not double is because you get some losses in the laminates?
That is correct. You get losses in the laminates. You get losses in the electromagnetic windings. There's all kinds of losses that are, the length of the device, how far the flux has to travel through the device, through the flux path. So all those add together.
Before we go too much longer in this interview, we want to let's get the audience up to speed as to what the ramifications are for this technology. You've got lots of motors around the world. Every house has them in the refrigerator. You've got them in your air conditioner, in the pool pumps. And then in vehicles, you've got your alternators, you've got in electric cars, you've got motors running the wheels or running in place of the engine. So there are a lot of motors everywhere we turn in today's society. Should this technology be implemented in place of what exists now, what kind of savings would we be looking at?
Well, easily 50%. Easily cut the amount of energy required today if these were in place of what we're currently using. You would easily, and I say easily, half the amount of power that we're now consuming.
And that's with the same cost of production for the motor to start out.
Basically
with
the same cost. There's a little more cost in the electronic control side of this device, but I think that's offset by the reduction in material usage on the other side. So yes, I think the cost would be pretty much the same as what we're currently using, if not a little less.
Okay. So the cost is comparable. The savings of energy used is cut in half.
Correct.
Now, this does require a replacement of existing motors. It's not something you can just add on to an existing motor or modify. You have to replace one motor with another.
That's correct.
So this is a new infrastructure that needs to, so for new energy or new designs coming out, they should all implement this technology. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And yeah, there is no retrofit methodology available for this. It would require a new motor.
So the obvious question for the audience would then be, why isn't this technology being implemented if it's so much of a no-brainer that it's so much more efficient? Where are we in the process of seeing this politically accepted in the scientific community so that it gets implemented into new motor designs?
I think we're seeing that happen on a day-to-day basis as we speak, Sterling. You know, Joe Flynn this February presented papers at the SAFE, which is the Space International Applications Forum, which is the mainstream. Pretty much anybody that's anybody in science shows up at those and every year. And you know, Joe Flynn presented his papers along with several very prominent partners at the SAFE proceedings this year. And has been very well accepted and very well placed in industry with his motor technology.
Let's talk about some of those partners that you mentioned, significant partners. Let's put some names on those.
We're talking Boeing.
Boeing Skunk Works?
Boeing, the Phantom Works primarily.
Uh-huh.
And then basically all divisions of Boeing are getting involved in this motor technology now.
And this is not just speculative. This is not, they're not just considering possibly getting in bed with Flynn. They are in contractual relationships with Joseph Flynn right now, correct?
To my knowledge, yes, they are. You know, and I go by what I've been told verbally and what I've seen pictures-wise of the different prototypes and the different work that's going on. And they're working on both motors and generators.
Let's talk about your relationship with Joseph Flynn. How well do you know him, and how long have you known him?
I've known Joe for about 2.5 to 3 years now. And
you're on a first name, telephone at home basis.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I've had numerous long conversations. They're fairly well spread apart because Joe is an extremely busy man at this point. And it's very hard to get a hold of, especially in the last several months since the state proceedings. Since the state proceedings, he has become virtually unobtainable.
because he's come into such high demand.
That's right.
His technology. Mm-hmm. Now, your coming into awareness of him came because you went and saw his patent. You got the patent. You built a device based on the patent, and it worked.
That's right.
And you didn't even talk to Joseph Flynn in that whole process. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You just
went? We didn't start communications until I had built several motors. And basically the motors were offshoots of my own design and then one of his design that that he has on his website that shows the rotary motor. And built a replica of the rotary motor basically just from what I saw on the website. Drew it up in AutoCAD and then basically, you know, created it so that it was had perfect symmetry and was a good motor design as far as balance and everything, and built the motor and then sent him the results. And that's when our relationship began. And, you know, we've been in contact ever since. I've also been an advocate for Joe and his technology. I try everywhere and every chance I get to promote his technology to other companies and to individuals that I think could benefit. And as a result, we've kind of helped each other along, and he's appreciative of that, and it told me there, told me to that extent. But we've had a very good long ongoing relationship, and are continuing to. He's you know, he's working toward the finite side of his motors now, the science, the finite part of the science. They're working with masters in mathematics, masters in physics, and creating their own software that will, you know, there's finite element analysis software out there that just about anybody can obtain and use, but it's static. In other words, it'll take a snapshot of the motor and the flux path and what's happening within them at a moment in time. What they're working on is dynamic modeling software that will allow them to watch the entire rotary motion of the motor, the flux as the levels rise and fall in the flux path, and what takes place in the motor in a dynamic manner rather than a static manner.
You had mentioned at one point that there's material science that could be brought to bear in this technology that could increase the efficiency even more.
Absolutely. And that material science is related to the flux paths themselves, the materials that are used to, you know, to hold, to carry the flux.
So you're not losing the flux or the efficiency from the flux resistance in the laminates?
That's right. And the material that you use is crucial to how efficient this motor can become. The more, the higher the saturation level that the material can obtain, the more focus and more energy you can, you know, concentrate in the device. It's a flux path manipulation device, and the more flux the path can carry efficiently, the more efficient the motor will become.
Let me mention that we do have a call-in number for people who are listening live. The number is 877-876-5227. Don will pick up the phone and plug you in if you have a question for Joe on this technology. I just had a thought, too, in terms of a practical application. If we have one of these Joseph Flynn parallel path motors integrated into, let's say, an electric car that runs on electric motors, we would then be increasing with the same, everything else being the same, the battery capacity, et cetera, the, how much charge it has, how much further could that car go with one of these motors on it, everything else being the same size motor, same batteries?
Worst case, you double the range.
Worst case?
Worst case, you would double the range. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I would think that, like Tesla Motors Inc. over in California that has that spiffy new electric car, race car, they would be very interested in something like this.
I would surely think so. Yes, sir.
Have you thought of getting on the phone with them, maybe bending their ear a little bit?
No, I haven't. I've here of recent have been just extremely busy with my business and earning a living for the family. So it's kind of preoccupied me from my my true love, and that's this technology and motors. But so I guess I apologize for that. But yes, I've been preoccupied and haven't got a chance to go out and beat some more paths for Joe.
On a personal level, you would love to be able to work on this stuff full time, and you're having to do other things to make ends meet. You would like to be able to be in a research and development scenario as your primary income, is that correct?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
but, you know,
how many of these cutting-edge energy technologies don't get the funding and financing that they really deserve, while some of these, there are other things that are getting funded that are absolutely asinine in terms of if you compare them in the potential they have to really make a difference on the planet. It's kind of a sad commentary, but hopefully through exposure such as this and other things, some of that can change gradually.
I'm in all hopes of that, yes. And you're so right there. You know, there are so many other technologies that are so far down the pole from where this technology is. You know, I was going to say could be, but that'd be a wrong the wrong words to use where it is. And it's constant. It's a constant waste of the taxpayers' dollars, in my opinion, as well.
So Boeing's taking a look at this. Is there anyone out there right now that is actually cranking out on a commercial scale Flynn-based motors, or when are we going to see that?
I think we're going to see that in the next year. We're already starting to see that with some of the some devices. I'm not really privy to the information at that level, as far as what devices and what's being manufactured and who, by where and what. I do know that there are several big companies. One makes hard drives that's using them, going to be using them in their drives for the spindle motors.
Can you mention the name of that company?
I could mention it. I don't know if they are privy to having their name brought into this at this point. So I'd be a little reluctant to mention the name of the company at this point. But
you
I do know they make
the past,
hard drives for laptops.
It is a name that anyone would recognize.
Oh, in a heartbeat. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So they're using this technology in their hard drives for turning the motor of a hard drive.
Yeah, the spindle. Yeah, for turning the disk.
Mm-hmm. So they're using less energy, means less heat,
longer
more efficiency.
Life, better. That's right. Longer battery life. And, that's one of the many things. Another thing that a lot of people don't understand about parallel path technology, Stirling, is it's a latching magnetic effect. In other words, when you apply the field to the two windings and you focus the energy to one side, and there's a flux path there, obviously, to act upon and have those forces and the flux flow through, it'll latch to that side. You can remove power and the force remains. Okay? The force of the two magnets remains focused to that side until you apply power and force the field to the other side. So it is a latching effect as well, and they're using that as well in latching and clamping devices in the aerospace industry.
So like moonwalking boots?
I'm sorry.
Would that work for a moonwalking boot? Or not moonwalking,
absolutely.
Like walking on walls or walking on a ceiling?
Absolutely. In the same manner that the old NASA boots that you've all seen on the internet work, only with much more efficiency. Much greater efficiency. Much less power required to make the field snap from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is the main thrust of the parallel path magnetic technology, is that it takes considerably less power to achieve the same latching and field focusing effects that you see in the other magnetic technologies.
At the bottom of the hour, coming up here in about 5 minutes, we're going to have a presentation by Xenia about what we can do now to reduce our energy footprint on the planet. While we come up on that, what I'd like to do is, I remember the time you had me on the phone and you just explained this thing very simply to me about in the most simple iteration, a very simple kind of a junior high science experiment situation where you have two magnets, two laminate bars. Could you walk through that with us? Just kind of explain, what happens where you ramp up the voltage and the bottom, the one drops off. Just go through that little story with us.
Sure. Basically, as we were saying earlier, you have two flux bar or two flux paths, which are laminate bars that I scavenged from old transformers.
And a laminate bar is just a bunch of little pieces of metal glued together, basically.
And stacked up and either taped together. You can do it just taping them together. You don't have to glue them together. I just used strapping tape and taped them together. And to give them some rough dimensions, we used a half inch wide by 24 thousandths inch thick laminates. And they were probably 5 inches long. So half inch by 5 inch by 24 thousandths inch thick laminates. And we stacked up roughly about 41 or so of those laminates in each stack to make two bars. And then we used two cube magnets. The magnets and the field strength to have this thing work efficiently you have to take note and pay attention to how strong the magnets are. If you use too strong a magnet, you're going to negate a lot of the effect and lose a great deal of the efficiency.
The material science doesn't allow us to go with the neodymium right now because you're going to lose too much to the flux.
Well, you can still use neodymium, but it becomes more involved technically to understand the circular mill area or the cross-sectional area of the flux material has to increase with the field strength. You can do it with these neodymiums with the existing materials we have now, but it's a lot more complicated design. You have to take into all these things into consideration and figure out a much thicker flux path for each bar to use the higher strength magnet. But mm-hmm. getting back to the explanation and keeping it simple, you have the two bars, one on top and one on bottom, and you have two magnets. They're cube magnets, we'll say 3/4 inch cube magnets. And I'll get to the strength of the magnets a little later, but if you place the magnets, we'll say you take the bottom bar and you set both magnets on the bar. If you were to divide the bar into three pieces, you put them on the 1/3 and 2/3 positions so that you're actually equally spacing the magnets on the bottom bar with the south pole setting down on that bar, both north poles setting up. And then place the top bar on top of those two magnets. So now you have two bars that are being suspended or held by two magnets, with the magnets having common poles on each bar. And I say that by north pole on one magnet, north pole on the other magnet, both facing up in a like manner. And then both bars, upper and lower, have to have a winding on them. And the winding, in the case of the demonstration model that I published or put on your website there for everyone to use, was roughly, I believe, 150 to 200 turns, I'd have to look, but of winding. It depends on the gauge of the wire and your power source that you have available. The model we built was designed to work off of 2C batteries. So we had the number of turns, you can go through a basic equation that will tell you, you know, what your Gauss level of the electromagnet will be given the amp turns. And you go through that calculation and you figure out you have 3 volts, and then you work it that way to get the flux level that you're able to create with one of those permanent magnets that you used in the device. Once you've figured that out, you make a winding on the top bar that's able to produce that amount and a winding on the bottom bar that's able to produce that amount of field strength. And they have to be wound so that, or at least wired up. You can wind them both identically the same, but they have to be connected backwards with respect to each other. So when you have the top one from left to right creating a north to south pole, the bottom one needs to be south to north. They need to be opposite of each other. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, the device will not work. It'll be a non-functioning device, and you'll think I'm crazy and that I don't know what I'm talking about. But as long as that is adhered to and you have the top winding and the bottom winding reflexes of each other or opposite, you can apply power to those. I used a variable power supply for all of the models that I built. And the variable power supply, you adjust it up very slowly, and you have two end bars that you make out of these same laminate materials that act as basically a keeper would act on a horseshoe magnet.
Without doing anything, when you put the end bars in place, they snap on because of the magnetic forces. So they're held in place magnetically. Is that correct?
That's correct. They'll both snap on, and they'll both divide the fields from the permanent magnets evenly into each side of the device.
Mm-hmm.
So each device will be held on by one magnet's worth of flux.
Okay.
When you apply the power to these windings in the proper manner, with one north to south and one south to north, you adjust the voltage to the windings very slowly up, bringing the voltage up slowly and gradually, and watching the two bars. When you hit what we call the Flynn effect, what I call the Flynn effect point, you'll find that there's a magic bell curve or hot spot at a very low voltage, at very modest current, that will cause the field to focus all the way to one side of the device, thus making one of the two bars fall off one side of the device and clamping the other bar on with extreme strength.
So the magnet strength of the one side is gone. It's gone to zero.
Correct.
And the magnet strength on the other has gone up to two times.
That's right. Creating four times the force, which is very impressive for a couple of C batteries.
And so just about anyone can take materials, you know, from around and build one of these proofs of concept to show to themselves that this really does work.
Absolutely.
And it's a little more complicated to then take that principle and integrate it into a motor, a turning motor.
Yes, it's a magnitude more difficult because of the dynamics involved. And that's where we get with this dynamic modeling software that they're developing right now with Flynn Research. But
now, you've built some motors, and what kind of output were you getting from the ones that you built that were not
optimal?
Most of the
motors that I built were in the 10th horsepower class, quarter to 10th horsepower class. We're very, very small, modest motors. But they all exhibit the characteristics that the parallel path motors are noted, the noteworthy characteristics of the parallel path motors. The characteristics of a parallel path motor are, to say the least, very impressive. When you put a very heavy load on a parallel path motor and really load the motor down to, we'll say, 75% of its full load capability before you stall the shaft, the parallel path motor becomes extremely, extremely energetic electrically as far as you could call it a back electromotive force pulse that's created when you release power from each winding. And this is due to the fact that since you're focusing all that energy from one side of this device to the other, and in a motor's dynamic rotary, environment, when you put a load on that, you're able to catch the collapsing, field that's within the winding, but you're also catching the collapse of the field within the flux material as well. So there's a great deal of what we call backsourcing energy created by this device when it's under a heavy load. So much so that a standard bench power supply, I have an adjustable supply that I use here just for instances, the 35 amp 15 volt, 0 to 15 volt adjustable power supply. I'm able to trip that supply, in other words, make it shut itself down when I put a heavy load on the parallel path motor due to these energetic effects when you put it under heavy load. The scope measurements and some of the other research that's been done in this regard by some of these other companies that have teamed with Joe also reflect the same results. These motors have a very, very noteworthy characteristics under heavy load.
So one of their attributes is that they perform especially well under heavy load.
That is correct. And
would that mean also that you could? What about low RPM?
They're extremely good at low RPM. Down in the 100 to 200 RPM range is where these motors really work the best. They love a load, as Joe has said many times. They love these motors really, they truly love a load. And one of these, that's just one of the characteristics. One of the other characteristics is that when you heavily load a PPMT motor, it doesn't have the linear response curve that you're used to seeing in the current draw when you put a heavy load on a shaft. When you put a heavy load on a parallel path motor, the current will rise to a set point, and you never rise above the current that the winding obviously is going to consume in a DC test, a static test, in this motor design. Another good thing that needs to be explained about that is that these motors, you're only creating enough field to equal one of the permanent magnets. So that the internal resistance of a parallel path type motor is going to be significantly higher than a standard motor of a similar horsepower. Okay? I'll say that again. The internal resistance of a parallel path type motor design is going to be significantly higher to achieve the same torque output that a conventional motor of the same output would have to measure to create the same output. What that means is that when you put a heavy load on a parallel path motor, you're, you know, clear down to the stall torque or stall shaft, you're only going to see the internal resistance of the winding. It becomes a resistor. So you're able to max out at a much, much lower current in the parallel path motor than you would ever see in a standard motor of the same output torque. Because the standard motor to create the same amount of torque has a much, much lower on resist or winding resistance.
Now, just in from a without knowing electronics as well as you do, mm-hmm. when you say that the Flynn has a greater internal resistance, I would think that would be a negative thing. I would picture heat. I would picture electrical losses. Is that not the case?
No, because the higher the resistance, the less power you're consuming, the less current, and the less wattage that is consuming to give you the same rotary torque.
Okay.
So the higher the internal resistance a motor can have and have the same output torque, the more efficient the motor becomes, the less power that it's consuming to create the same shaft torque.
Mm-hmm.
So internal resistance, the lower the internal resistance on a motor is, the more power it's going to consume. The higher the internal resistance, the less power it's going to consume. So in this case,
go ahead and finish.
Oh, that I'm pretty well finished there.
I was just going to ask, is there any existing application, motor application, for which a Flynn motor would be counterindicated? Meaning that it would not be something you would want to use, that you would want to use the conventional motor as opposed to a Flynn motor, or could we say that every single application out there where a motor is being used would be better served with a Flynn motor?
I would say that second statement is the correct statement. Every motor.
In other words, you can't think of any instance of an existing motor where the existing motor technology does better than the Flynn motor technology.
I can't think of any technology motor-wise that's not going to benefit by having the same force created with half the energy.
What about a high-speed motor?
Motors that right now I think is limiting factors, and it's limiting because of the materials that are used, not so much that the motor can't go faster. It becomes a material issue. But he's got motors that are in the 15,000 to 20,000 RPM class right now. Mm-hmm. With the same technology.
He has prototypes that are running at that speed.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has created, I'll just explain one of these scenarios that he explained to me. They're used, there was a request for him to try to design a rotary high-speed motor that used parallel path technology for a turbine type of design, electric turbine, where you'd have an impeller blade, like a ducted fan on RC airplanes would have type of design. That they had tried dozens of different motors and they'd all burn up trying to achieve the, you know, the ounce inches of torque at a given RPM over a period of time. Joe's parallel path motor was the only one that they had been able to test electrically that could create the ounce inches of torque at that given RPM and sustain it and hold it without burning up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different, I guess you could say, aspects to his motors that lend them to be a much more ideal candidate for different applications, given the fact that they'll, you know, that is one of the other characteristics that I haven't mentioned yet about the parallel path motors, and that is that they're a cold running motor. They don't get hot. They don't draw
any. When you say they don't get hot, you mean there's no heat generated whatsoever in any instance?
Well, there's a little heat, obviously, yes, there is a little heat. But they'll never rise above ambient temperature. I believe what he states, you kind of got me on the guard here, but it's unbelievably better than a conventional motor as far as the under load. In other words, if you were to put a parallel path motor into an application and then put a 75% full load on it and let it run for 4 hours with that 75% full load on a dyno, you would come back to the motor and find that it had not risen more than, we'll say, 20 degrees Celsius above what it was at room temperature. Okay, and I may be way overstating that. Compared to a standard, we'll say, induction motor, we'll say a half-inch standard induction motor, if you put it under a 75% full load and let it run for 2 hours, and then come back and measure the temperature of the motor, the actual temperature rise of the motor, performing that work for that period of time, you would find out that the Flynn would be, it's no comparison. It's just no comparison. They're a considerably colder running motor.
Let's talk about the propeller application. I was not aware that there was present motor technology. You could not run a propeller with a motor on a commercial airline or airplane type of application. But the Flynn technology would enable you to do that. Is that correct?
In its larger formats, I would say, and this is just my opinion, I would say yes, that is definitely a possibility. I know that he's working with RC scale aircraft right now. And I'll say scale, quarter scale, which are fairly large aircraft. In UAV arena, okay, to make impeller drivers or motors.
UAV being the unmanned aerial vehicle?
That's correct.
For drones?
That's correct. Giving them electrical, an electrical ducted fan methodology for the power plant.
What's the sound? Is there any difference in the audio, the sound, the noise that an engine motor makes of the Flynn versus the regular, or is it the same, just a function of RPM?
Yeah, it's the same. It's pretty much a function of RPM. Flynn may sound a little different. A lot of the sounds you hear from a motor tend to reflect the quality of the machining and the craftsmanship in the motor. If you hear a lot of noise in a motor, a lot of times it's because it's been a fairly poorly crafted motor, depending on the motor, obviously. Some of the wheel motors in electric vehicles you're going to hear a lot of noise from simply because, you're making an intense, high-level amount of magnetic field, that's required to create the forces to move you forward. There is noise involved in that. A lot of these very high-tech, high-power motors that you'll see, the hub motors, are fairly noisy motors. They'll rattle the very chassis of the vehicle, because you're banging an immense amount of power and creating immense torque pulses that manifest themselves as vibration in the chassis. That doesn't go away, you know, depending on the motor technology. You're still going to have those immense torque pulses, which
in an electrical vehicle application, you want to go more toward a each wheel having its own motor, don't you?
That's correct.
You don't have all the transmission losses and other line, I don't know if you call them line losses, but the you have one engine in an existing car, then you have to transmit that to two wheels, either in the front or in the back, whereas in the ideal electric motor configuration or the electric car, you have one motor per wheel.
Correct.
And you can also go to regenerative systems that way as well, can't you?
Yes, you can. The Flynn, the newest Flynn motor technologies that are that he released at STAFE this spring.
The Flynn motor work as a generator.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And let's talk about over-unity.
Okay.
That's not something that Joe wants to talk about. I mean, he's not going to use that terminology, but you're a little more rambunctious that way. Let's talk about over-unity. Is there such a thing with the Flynn motor?
I would say if there's such a thing with any motor technology at this point, it definitely exists in the arena of parallel path magnetic technology. It's an incredibly difficult beast to try to track down and to try to nail and to come up with an ironclad single sentence answer for that question. Parallel path motors really come into their own and really show their high efficiency at very low RPM and under high torque load. They are very well suited for traction motor applications.
Well, they would be well suited for a low RPM wind turbine.
The motor would be. But understand, the motor's curves and the motor's responses do not directly reflect back to the generator's curves and its responses. They're two different animals. Even though it's the same device, what happens in the measurements and the response curves and RPMs required to give you different power outputs versus inputs are happening in two different sections. In other words, to simplify that, Sterling, the motor is lend itself very, very well to very low RPM, very high torque environments. That at least the motors that I've built, they all lend themselves to working. They're most efficient in those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
The generators are a high RPM device. In other words, you have to run them up to a fairly moderate RPM, at least the generators that we've been able to produce. You have to run them up to a fairly high RPM to get the levels out of them that are comparable to what we see. You know, they're comparable to a standard generator, okay,
mm-hmm.
to a point. The Flynn generators, which are the motor as well, they're just, you know, being turned just like you would a motor. It's a motor generator. There is some commutation that's involved to increase efficiency, but overall you can just turn the thing at fairly moderate to high RPMs and produce a great deal of power. What we've come to understand about the Flynn technology when you use it as a generator is that it doesn't really shine very well under moderate to low loads. But you put a high load on a Flynn generator and it becomes a very impressive device indeed under high loads.
So you would want to design your system when you're using it as a generator to have it serving in a high load scenario.
That's exactly right. And the reason for that is the Flynn effect that we talked about in the static device.
Mm-hmm.
It only occurs, it only manifests itself when you have a set amount of voltage applied to the windings to make that effect occur. Okay. Well, in a generator, when you're turning it under a moderate load, if you haven't reached that back voltage in or the load voltage in the windings that get you to the Flynn effect point, you're not going to see the advantages of the Flynn effect take place.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you heavily load that device and the more current you run through those windings, once you've reached that Flynn effect under a load scenario, then you reach a knee in the curve. And things start working for you very, very quickly.
So without going into the particulars of the engineering involved, just a general question, would a Flynn motor slash generator be, would it enable you to double your energy output from a wind turbine?
I would say you're not going to see double, but I would definitely say you're going to be in the 175 range, 150 range. You know, in other words, you'd take, I wouldn't say double, I'd say about one and a half.
But you're going to be able to increase your energy gain from a wind turbine or from a tidal turbine or whatever other alternative energy harnessing system that uses a generator in the process.
Absolutely.
And so this would be something that we should be promoting to other fellow energy, alternative energy types of modalities where there's a generator involved, that they should be employing the Flynn technology.
Absolutely. Anytime you're able to see a generator that will allow you to see a knee take place or a stop, you know, the curve stops, it flattens out under a heavy load. The load continues to go up. In other words, it continues to go up in its power output, but it stops increasing in shaft torque required to create that output. Have I explained that in a good enough manner to you there?
You'd probably need to be explaining that to the engineers who are doing the design for these projects, but what I'm really trying to get at here is something that hadn't occurred to me, is that we could be bringing the price point of these cutting-edge energy technologies even closer to being competitive with conventional power by employing Joseph Flynn technology in their generators.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How close are we to being to a point where that's commercially viable? Because we're still doing some R&D, from what I understand, in optimizing the Flynn designs.
Yes, he's working right now with, like I said at the earlier parts of this, he's working with several PhDs in mathematics and physics, and they're creating their own modeling software that's dynamic. So they're able to dynamically design these motors and predict the responses and you know what the motors are going to do and be able to design the motors for specific applications. That's one of the things that's been an elusive little beast for Joe to chase is different, you know, the different windings. In other words, you can have a motor with we'll say 10 gauge wire and 500 turns, or you can have a motor with 20 gauge wire and several thousand turns. You're going to create the same field strength. But there's two different windings and two different characteristics that go with them that relate to the dynamic response of the motor because of the different inductances. It gets pretty technical very quickly.
Mm-hmm. We're just about out of time here. I'd like to get to some nuts and bolts in terms of, let's say I'm an energy inventor and I want to get my hands on Joseph Flynn and his technology. I want to license something. What kind of a waiting queue am I looking at to be able to get his attention for my application?
From what I've seen and from what I've been led to understand, he's been Flynn Joe has been fairly gobbled up in big industry. So that's a tough one to answer as to what a specific time frame would be. I know every chance I get, I steer different technologies and different what I feel promising aspects for his technology to fill voids, I steer them his way,
mm-hmm.
not really knowing whether what I've steered, you know, has yielded any fruit or not, because I don't get a chance to talk to Joe as often as I would like to get those answers or have some of that feedback.
So So we're still kind of on the cutting edge with Joseph Flynn technology. It's still in some research and development, but in a year or two, we could be to the point where any technology could be employing Joseph Flynn technology in their motor or generator and making their generators much more efficient as a result.
I would say that's an extraordinarily safe statement, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, it's been nice having you on. Mike Schuchel, he's a member of the New Energy Congress, which we founded last September, and he has built several Joseph Flynn motors and has done some firsthand testing and has proved this stuff works. Thanks for joining us. This has been New Energy or Free Energy Now show. Join us every day at freeenergynews.com for daily updates on various energy technologies around the planet. And join us each week on Saturday from 3 to 4 Pacific time for our Free Energy Now show.